Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Joan Mellon, and we're going to be talking about the Kennedy assassination. And, of course, have we been really told the truth? Well, now let's go to Joan and get her thoughts on that. Hi, Joan. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Stan. Good evening.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners how you got involved in studying this subject?
I got involved in writing about the Kennedy assassination because many years ago, 1969 to be exact, I met Jim Garrison, who was the district attorney in Orleans Parish in Louisiana. And at the moment that I met Garrison, he had just lost a case that he had brought against a local New Orleans businessman named Clay Shaw, whom Garrison had named as being one of the conspirators in the assassination of President Kennedy. And Garrison had a very difficult time. This was 1969 now, not 1992, when we've had the JFK Act and the release of so many millions of FBI and CIA and other agency documents. Garrison had to really do a very old-fashioned investigation. And I was fascinated by Garrison. I was interested in Garrison. Even I continued to know him. In the 1970s, he was put on trial in federal court for taking bribes from pinball people. That is, pinball gambling. Pinball gambling was illegal in New Orleans then, and Garrison was acquitted, but he lost his position as a district attorney. He just was too exhausted to run much of a campaign in 1973, and he lost. And once he lost the office of district attorney, he could no longer pursue his Kennedy investigation. Now, I wanted to write about him in the 1970s, and I didn't do it. I wasn't ready. Very hard subject. And I think it's so I began again in 1997. Took 7 more years, and I wrote a book that was called A Farewell to Justice, which is not only about Garrison's investigation into the Kennedy assassination, but also my own investigation, because Garrison had died in 1992, and I picked up where he left off, trying to look at the new documents and see whether Garrison was right, whether his case was correct, that the CIA was behind the Kennedy assassination. And most recently, I published another book, which I call a prequel, and it's called Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, which goes takes us through Garrison's life up to the moment when he immerses himself in the Kennedy investigation. Because after A Farewell to Justice was published, many people said, well, how could this be true? Here's a man who devotes himself. What were his motives? Was he trying to protect the mafia? Was he getting money? Why was he so obsessed, really, about finding out who killed President Kennedy? And so I wrote the book about his life and many of the stuff using the research I did, of course, also for A Farewell to Justice. And I show the person who really cared more about justice than about the law and who really cared about President Kennedy, who was an admirer of President Kennedy, and who also was a very moral person throughout. He, for example, he fought against the Klan. He fought against burnings of crosses and bombings, explosions, all during the civil rights movement in the 1960s. He was elected district attorney of Orleans Parish in 1962 and continued, as I said, until 1973. So these were very turbulent years.
But of course, the thing is that the people, the rulers of America, could not allow the truth to come out about the murder of John Kennedy or the murder of his brother or the murder of Martin Luther King, all of whom we know, of course, were tied into CIA operations to do them in. We'll be back in just a moment with Joan Mellon. Well, Joan, it still is a very apropos subject because, of course, had the public learned what had really happened to President Kennedy and his brother and Martin Luther King, certainly we never would have had what happened on September 11th. If the people behind that had been exposed, why, of course, the public never again would have trusted any of the government stories, and they would have realized, of course, that the... that distorts our reality, of course, forms our taste, makes us believe what they want us to believe, and was able to conceal the conspiracy behind the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Did you come up with that conclusion?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I absolutely agree. I think that the destruction of a free press in this country began with the cover-up of the Kennedy assassination when the press rubber-stamped the Warren Report. And when we got, once that happened, everything that we've seen since up to 9/11 has followed. And the, now, I mean, even after the release of all the documents, which make clear the CIA cover-up of all these assassinations, as you say, Stan, 100%, you never will find these reporters in the National Archives. You will not find the mainstream historians like Michael Beschloss. Let's see what Robert Caro has to say in his last volume about Lyndon Johnson. They shun this topic. Even Taylor Branch, who did the biography of Martin Luther King, didn't describe his assassination, and he was on Book TV, and somebody said, well, how could you not describe the death of your subject? And Branch said, well, we didn't have enough time. It's frightening to these people. They don't want the truth, and because the mainstream historians have stayed away from the subject, I think the population remains uncertain about what happened, although for those who've done the research, it's pretty obvious.
All right, fine. Of course, then, of course, Clay Shaw. Were you able to find definite evidence of Clay Shaw's association with the CIA and other covert organizations?
Absolutely. That one of the most important releases in the JFK Act were Clay Shaw's CIA files. Garrison never had them, but now you can see people have tried. They knew, I mean, the fact that he was with the CIA, that's clear. But people have said, well, he was just a businessman who was routinely debriefed from trips to Latin America and Eastern Europe and so forth. When you look at his personnel file, what you see is that he had assignments from the CIA and that he was told to look for certain things, do certain things, involve himself in the political life of various countries in Latin America, comes back, and of course he reports, and you can see that really he's being used by the CIA.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joan Mellon, of course, has done a lot of research now about the Garrison case, and of course one of the key figures there was a man named Clay Shaw. And, of course, the idea that he was a member of the CIA, was working for the CIA, and in association with the CIA, why, that was ridiculed by the controlled media in the United States. And, of course, the government denied it, and they spent a fabulous amount of money to defend Clay Shaw and, of course, to discredit Jim Garrison. In fact, they went after him. They got him indicted on false charges that he was taking bribes. And even though he beat the case and managed to get him defeated as the district attorney of New Orleans, but subsequently he was elected a judge there. The people actually kept him in as a judge for many years. Of course, they destroyed his family. They destroyed his life. I remember hearing an interview with Jim Garrison many years later. He's interviewed on video, and somebody asked him, if you had it to do all over again, would you do it? And there was a long moment of hesitation. He said, no, it really wasn't worth it. But he did it. He did what was right, and he deserves our applause and our thanks. So
sometimes he said it wasn't worth it.
Right.
Sometimes he said, how could he not have done it?
Well, I think that sometimes, you know, you're in that sort of a situation. You do what's right, and you wonder if it's the right thing to do. But you do what's right because you know what's right, although you'll pay a terrible price for it, which he did pay. So let's get into the background of Clay Shaw. Of course, Joan simply points out that what has been suppressed from the American people is the fact that there was a CIA file on Clay Shaw that was subsequently released that showed in... go ahead and repeat what you just said a moment ago. What was in that file? How do
they
we know that he was not... that they simply knew about him, but he was actively working for the Central Intelligence Agency?
That's right, Stan. And in fact, Clay Shaw had been cleared by five separate components of CIA, and his files resided in the operations section. So the idea that he was just one more domestic contact who was debriefed plainly wasn't true. And years later, a former CIA employee named Victor Marchetti, this is well known, came out and said that he had heard one morning Richard Helms, who was then director of Central Intelligence at the time that Garrison put Clay Shaw on trial, and Helms said to his right-hand man, are we doing enough for that guy down there? That guy down there, of course, was Clay Shaw. So the idea that Richard Helms, who was deputy director of plans, which means clandestine services, at the time of the Kennedy assassination, is worrying now about Clay Shaw. And they're wondering, of course, whether he'll lie, whether which is what they wanted him to do. And, of course, when he got on the stand, he perjured himself up and down the road and got away with it. And what happened, Garrison, after Shaw was acquitted, Garrison went into court, and, of course, it was state court in Louisiana, and charged Shaw with perjury. And it was simple. It was just open and shut. Shaw had said on the stand he never knew David Ferry, who was the handler of Lee Harvey Oswald, and he never knew Oswald. And Garrison had put on the stand about, I don't know, six or seven people who saw the three of them together. Shaw, David Ferry, the CIA contract pilot, and Lee Harvey Oswald traveling around cities north of Baton Rouge, cities called Clinton and Jackson. And they, Shaw and Ferry escorted Oswald to the East Louisiana State Hospital at Jackson, which was, although Oswald didn't know this, was an insane asylum. And, of course, people saw them, black people, white people. And some of the black people said they could never have conspired with the white people to make up this story because in those years, this was the summer of 1963, black and white people never spoke to each other. And I have to say the hysteria this past week over the election of Barack Obama, among some of those same people who are still alive, the feelings that they had were so deeply entrenched, the racial feelings, that it could never have been, as Shaw's friends said, that this was all trumped up and that it didn't happen and that the people made up the story, because it was devastating. If Shaw, Ferry, and Oswald are traveling together, it shows without a doubt that Shaw's assignment was to set Oswald up. And Oswald, when he was arrested, as we all know, in Dallas, he said, I'm a patsy. Who made him a patsy? It was Sean Ferry who drove him up there, and Oswald tried to get a job at the insane asylum, and he would have gotten it. And I think that Garrison later speculated, yes, he would have gotten it, and maybe he would escape, and then he'd be found in Dealey Plaza, be arrested in Dallas as an escapee from an insane asylum, and be accused of being an unstable, crazy psychopath who killed President Kennedy. Well, the Warren Report actually does say he was an unstable individual and a loner and very psychopath, although Oswald never got that job, and I found out why in my book, Farewell to Justice, which was that the medical director of the hospital, whom the Warren Commission never called, happened to be passing when Oswald was in a room ranting and raving about how he planned to kill Fidel Castro. And the doctors, Dr. Frank Silva, no longer with us, but he was really when he died, he was called the father of psychiatry in the state of Louisiana. And Dr. Silva said to himself, no way that man gets hired in my hospital. So the CIA's plan was thwarted, but they used part of it, and they decided, well, they'll just make him a loner, a crazy person in Dealey Plaza, without the benefit of this, having been an employee or an inmate of the East Louisiana State Hospital. But this is at the heart of the Garrison case. And again, this material really should be common knowledge to the population of this country. I absolutely agree with you, Stan, and it isn't.
And, of course, the thing is that obviously they were setting up Lee Harvey Oswald. Here he's out, is out standing on the street corners there, and I've forgotten what town it was. He's in New Orleans, passing out flyers for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee supporting Fidel Castro to make people think that he is pro-communist. And then, of course, he gets into this big altercation with some people. He goes on the radio and he talks about, you know, he really was really rather smart. He was very, very clever, and you listen to what he had to say. Somebody asked him if he was a Marxist or communist, and he goes into this long dissertation about Marxism. He was a very, very clever person, and he was trying to create the impression he was a communist, and that then would explain why he was going to kill President Kennedy. I don't think that he ever really understood that he was being set up to you.
That's correct. I think what Oswald thought was that he was part of the anti-Castro movement, and then he was going to be involved somehow in the murder of Fidel Castro. And you see there are sightings of Oswald at the training camps north of Lake Pontchartrain. They're practicing with Cuban exiles, planning to get back into Cuba. One of the new things that I found that was actually I just put into the new book, Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, has to do with Oswald as a false defector in the CIA's counterintelligence program going into the Soviet Union. CIA, up and down the line, denied that when Oswald returned from the Soviet Union that he had been debriefed by them, because then it would show that, they had some interest in him. And I've recently discovered, there's new material still out there, that Oswald was debriefed. He was debriefed by the CIA office in New York, and I found out the name of the person, which turns out to be a woman, and on we go. It was part of the Soviet Russia section, which had something like 10 aspects of it. I think it seems very small embroidery on the story, but it helps us to prove that Oswald was not a Marxist, did not go to the Soviet Union because he wanted to participate in communism, but was sent there by James Angleton, who was the chief of counterintelligence for CIA.
And, of course, I think the Russians always felt that it was a CIA plot. They never really trusted him. He was certainly given a plus job over there and special privileges, but I think they always realized that he was a plant of our government. And then, of course, my understanding is when he came back to the United States, both he and his wife, Maria, why it was our government that paid their way back. Why would our government pay the way back for a man who'd gone to Russia to defect? That wouldn't make sense, unless, of course, it was all a cover story.
Well, if the press participates, any lie can go forward. I think that's right. The State Department paid for his way back. And when he got back to Dallas, who does he become friendly with? But another CIA asset, this is also well-known, named George de Morenshield.
Oh, of course, right.
There they are. And then in April of 1963, Oswald goes to live in New Orleans, which was the city of his birth. And that's where, of course, Garrison comes in, because Garrison would later say he was in my jurisdiction. And this, in a way, the planning and the setting up of Oswald occurred in Louisiana, and therefore it was his duty and responsibility to investigate.
Well, whatever happened to Ferry? Now, of course, Ferry was also involved with that. He was sort of a bizarre sort of individual with no hair, no eyebrows, no eyelashes. But he certainly seemed to have been playing a part in this whole thing. In fact, we hear stories about a Ferry being associated with some of the bizarre experiments there having to do with animals and AIDS. Did you look into that at all, or did you stick?
I did. If I can't really prove something, I let it go.
Right.
I know that Ferry inherited mice, and there seemed to be mice, and he was interested in, the idea that Ferry couldn't do cancer research, I think, is impossible.
But
the fact that Ferry knew Oswald, that's something else, because of course, Ferry denied it. And then what happened was a character named Jack Martin, and in the movie by JFK, people could best identify, he was played by Jack Lemmon, I believe. Jack Lemmon. And he was actually in a marvelous part. Well, this character told Jim Garrison that Ferry knew Oswald. On the weekend of the assassination, Ferry denied it. And years later, a photograph, which I print in my book, A Farewell to Justice, there's Ferry at a cookout. Others have used it also, of course. Ferry at a cookout. There's Oswald in the picture. So Ferry and Oswald knew each other for a very long time, and I found out that on the eve of Oswald's visit to the Soviet Union, he spends the evening with Ferry at an amusement park near Lake Pontchartrain.
But didn't Ferry die under some rather strange circumstances?
So anyway, Garrison has cited Ferry. He thinks he's sure Ferry is involved, and he was correct about that. But he decided to wait and not arrest him. And sure enough, just before Garrison is about to arrest Ferry, Ferry dies.
And one of those very convenient deaths that occur so frequently to people who know too much that would expose the government's involvement. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Joan, you go right ahead with this story.
What I was going to say a moment ago was that these intelligence agencies, as we know, have ways of killing people.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
been in contact with intelligence agencies that readily admitted that, of course, they were involved. The book written by the brother of the head of the mafia, of Sam Giancano. The book was written by Chuck Giancano. It was called Double Cross. And, of course, the brother of the head of the mafia tells about how the mafia carried out the assassinations of world leaders, you know, at the behest of the Central Intelligence Agency, DMNU, of course, over in Vietnam, and of course Patrice Lumumba over in the Congo, and of course John Fitzgerald Kennedy. There's no question at all the CIA was paid the mafia to carry this out, because then they helped the mafia. The CIA would bring in the drugs, let the mafia distribute them. They had a nice relationship. But, you know, Sam Giancano really thought he could trust the CIA. And just to show you how there's no honor among thieves, the title of the book, Double Cross. What was the double cross? Why, the CIA had Sam Giancana killed. Why? Because he knew too much. Because, of course, he knew who'd really killed John Kennedy. He's the one who reigns the whole thing for the CIA. But we can't let the American people know that, because then the people who've done these terrible deeds and had so many people killed throughout the world. And for our listeners, if you haven't read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, written by John Perkins, who was actually recruited into intelligence work through the NSA and then went to work for private corporations, and talks about the heads of Panama and Ecuador who were killed after he'd interviewed them because they wouldn't go along with the program. This is standard operating procedure throughout the world. How could anything be this evil? Well, that's what this is all about. There really are evil people out there. And, of course, we cannot let the American people understand their tax money is being used for, well, certainly not the things that the average American believes. Joan, would you tell people that the Central Intelligence Agency was definitely involved with Clay Shaw and David Ferry and, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald? What sort of response do you get?
Well, you don't, and I have to say, even among researchers in the Kennedy assassination, they run from it. They're frightened. They don't want to be excluded from the mainstream. The mainstream means getting reviewed in the New York Times, getting in the bookstores, and nobody wants to touch it. It's really, it's a taboo subject. And it just happens, as you say, to be the truth, but it isn't easy to people, and of course this population, people here like to believe that the President of the United States has the powers that the mythology of the over of several centuries has dictated. It isn't true. One of the soldiers of fortune whom I interviewed said John F. Kennedy was the last president who thought he could take power. And the real issue here for me is, who rules America? Who runs this country? Do we have a policy of permanent war, so that whatever face we have in the White House is going to pursue these interests? And when we look at George H.W. Bush, about whom we were speaking a moment ago, which is a part of the subject of my next book, we see that people who were with the Central Intelligence Agency have been serving the interests of the defense contractors like Halliburton, like General Dynamics, and many more. And they thrive on permanent war, and they're going to have a war somewhere or other. Now, the people who came from Cuba hoped that it would be in Cuba. It turned out to be, at that time, to be in Vietnam. And I think that John F. Kennedy he was in a constant warfare with the CIA during his presidency. What made them angry at him was not even that he didn't plan to take ground forces into Vietnam, but that he was trying to lessen the powers of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was planning to substitute his the Defense Department overflights for CIA overflights. He was lessening their budget. He was lessening the powers of the Director of Central Intelligence. He was threatening the CIA as an institution. And at that, they were running a shadow government, and they would not tolerate it. I think people sometimes from the Cuban people wonder, how come they didn't get Castro? All those Giancana and all these people, they were trying to kill Castro. How come they never succeeded?
It's amazing.
And when you look at the story, you see the real enemy that they had was Kennedy, not Castro.
Right. And I think there's no question at all. They could have gotten Fidel Castro at any time. They never tried to get Fidel Castro. They had to come up with all sorts of cover stories. They had congressional investigations, the church committee. What they were going to do is put a powder in Fidel Castro's shoes that he put outside his door at night so his beard would fall out. Now, there is a really great Central Intelligence Agency plan. And then they were going to, of course, give him a poison cigar, and he would that idea didn't come through. Ladies and gentlemen, these people are not incompetent. They may try to convince you they're incompetent. These people are deadly serious. They kill people without reservation. We've interviewed a number of assassins. A number of our guests have been killed. But, well, for some reason or other, we're still here talking. Hope we will be for some time. Just hang on, Joan. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joan Mellon, and she's written several books dealing with the Kennedy assassination. But, Chris, fortunately now, we do have many of the FBI files, Sidney, on Clay Shaw, who Jim McGarrison is accused of being part of the CIA operation there in New Orleans. And of course, what did the file, the personnel file, the CIA file on Clay Shaw show? Why, that he was part of the CIA operation. But did you get hold of the CIA file on David Ferry as well?
That's interesting. I did not.
I really
don't know why. We have some documents about Ferry, but nothing like the... Because I think Shaw was really an employee, and so David Ferry was a sort of one of these rogue elements. He was doing flights out of Miami, sabotaging Cuba. But I don't have the same level of... I'm sure they exist, and I'm sure the FBI has more records than we have. I think one of the things we have to say is that as many documents as have been released, there are many that have been kept back, particularly, as you mentioned, Stan, the church committee. There were some customs officers in New Orleans who talked about how U.S. Customs used Oswald as an asset of theirs as well. And this is not surprising because we see the same thing down in Key West, where a character called Cesar Diosdado was working supposedly for customs, also for the CIA, loaned out, and CIA paid his salary. And Oswald had connections with customs in Louisiana, and some of these customs officers spoke to the church committee, and those testimonies are still closed. The only reason we know about them is the summaries got out. So if two-page summaries of what they said indicate what they, you know, what really was in the transcripts, we don't have those transcripts yet. So I think the government is keeping back a lot of information. They've destroyed a lot of information. There was a CIA officer in New Orleans named Hunter Leak who admitted near the end of his life that when Kennedy was killed, he took all his Oswald files and either destroyed some of them or took the rest to Langley. Well, what is he doing with Oswald files prior to the Kennedy assassination? So that tells us something. And when Oswald was arrested on Canal Street for that altercation that you referred to, Stan, and he was taken to be interviewed by New Orleans Police Intelligence, the first thing he said, and the Warren Commission does not have this, please call the FBI, tell them you have Lee Oswald in custody. And the officer was named Francis Martello. He does call the New Orleans field office of the FBI, and the young clerk who answered the telephone, it was late at night, starts looking in the files, and sure enough, files on Lee Oswald exist.
Hold up there. Hold up. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Arthur Stan. Of course, Joan has done an exhaustive work. Apparently, the first thing that Lee Harvey Oswald said when he was arrested was, call the FBI and let them know that the police here in Dallas are holding Lee Harvey Oswald. They called the FBI. Clerk at the FBI office looked it up. And, of course, they had a file. The FBI had a file on Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, this is the information that must be suppressed from the American people. The American people must never understand what happened, of course, with Kennedy was a coup de grace, And of course, it was simply an overthrow of the duly elected government and a replacement with Lyndon Johnson, who was really a very, very evil man. And of course, his function was to lead us into Vietnam. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. All the 58,000 boys who died in Vietnam, American boys, died for nothing. But we never talk about the million South Vietnamese, the 2 million North Vietnamese who died needlessly, and all the American boys who were wounded and will live out the rest of their lives in chronic pain and discomfort, and a totally unnecessary war, a war that probably never would have come about had they not been able to kill John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Well,
I just have to add one thing to what you've just
said. Go right ahead.
Yesterday at Temple University, we have a Vietnamese came to look to visit my fiction workshop to talk possibly to enroll in our program, and he's been writing a history of what they call in Vietnam the American War, and I said the same thing. I said, 2 million Vietnamese died. He said, looked at me, and he said, no, 3 million.
Yeah, there were 1 million South Vietnamese, 2 million North Vietnamese. These are the figures I've always used. Is that fairly accurate?
He confirms what you said. It's 3 million.
Right, of course, and this is what the American people are never told, just like they never told about the million who have died over there in Iraq. And that, of course, has been totally suppressed. We can't let the American people know that George Bush decided to go over there and go to war. And it was a war of choice, not of necessity, going to war with Iraq. And 1 million Iraqis have died, and somebody is responsible. But do you think that George Bush will ever be held responsible for lying to get us into that war? And if you read, of course, this fascinating article in Newsweek, the 3rd of November issue, written by Richard Haass, who is the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, a member of the Trilateral Commission. He's very close to the power structure of the people who rule the world. And in that article, November 3rd, Newsweek magazine, he points out that Iraq was a war of choice, not a war of necessity, a war of choice. George Bush decided to go to war, and, of course, he killed 1 million Iraqis. Well, that's neither here nor there. Let's go ahead and we're going to give out our telephone number. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And, Joan, would you like to get out your website? Would you like to tell people how they can get copies of your books?
Yes, I would like, if people are interested, please take a look at Jim Garrison, my newest book, Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, The Early Years. And that book, Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, you can get on Amazon.com, or you can also see some more things about my work on either JoanMellon.net, that's one word, JoanMellon, lowercase.net, or JoanMellon.com. And the two books are Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, The Early Years, the new one, and the previous book was A Farewell to Justice. And the subtitle of that is Jim Garrison, JFK's Assassination and the Case That Should Have Changed History, which is sort of what Stan is saying. It should have changed history if people accepted what really, you know, we have to reinvent the wheel over and over again. And I think it's an open secret what happened to President Kennedy, and yet we can't seem to break through and really make this part of the wisdom that we really should.
Well, of course, the thing is, Joan, people don't want to believe this. People would like to believe that. I mean, our country is the greatest country in the world. It is the greatest country in the world. Our country stands for righteousness. Our country should stand for righteousness, but it's been taken over by some very wicked people. I call them the Brotherhood of Darkness. And they have dominated our country for the better part of a century. And the average American doesn't understand that because they bought up control of the media going back to the very early years of the last century, and anybody doubts that will be glad to send them a copy of an article appeared in the Congressional Record in 1917, written by Congressman Oscar Calloway. Anybody can just call our 800 number, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927, ask for a copy of Congressman Calloway's article in the Congressional Record, where he tells about how J.P. Morgan and his powerful friends bought up the editorial policy of 25 newspapers, which allowed them to control largely what the American people thought, because they wanted to control the media so they could get us involved in World War I, and subsequently they got us involved in World War II, And the story of World War II is entirely different than we've been told. And then they got us involved in Korea, a no-win war. And then, of course, in Vietnam, a no-win war. And then in the current no-win wars in both Iraq and, of course, in Afghanistan. So the information is there. If you want more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But right now, if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to talk to Joan about the murder of an American president, and the effort on the part of Jim Garrison there, the district attorney in New Orleans, to bring out the truth about what really happened. Our telephone number here at the studio, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, because Jim Garrison tried to bring the truth out, they went out to get him. And
well,
they
I
did
think that's
everything
important.
They could, didn't they?
They have vilified him to this day. And I think that right now somebody is writing, a very silly person is writing a biography of Clay Shaw to vindicate Clay Shaw. And I think that they've nonstop. You'd think that the discrediting of Jim Garrison would be, they'd be happy he died and that would be the end of it. But it keeps on going. That should tell us something as well. And when my book came out, when the original, The Farewell to Justice, came out, what should appear at the same time but a book saying that the mafia really did it? And I think that's the second line of defense. The House Select Committee, when they did the Kennedy investigation in the 1970s, they had to rule there was a conspiracy. There was just too much evidence to suggest one man could have done this. And so then they turned to that mafia scenario, and they've kept it up really up to right to this minute.
Because as far as I can see, that the mafia was involved, but they were hired by the CIA to do it. They were the ones who provided the killers, but these were trained killers. But it's the CIA who covered up the truth and, of course, preserved this story that of the lone killer, Lee Harvey Oswald. And, of course, then, of course, we have Jack Ruby, who comes from the mafia, you know, just walking into the police station there, the Parkland police station, and gunning down Lee Harvey Oswald and his explanation. I saw a billboard put up by the John Birch Society that said, impeach Earl Warren, and that's why I killed Lee Harvey Oswald. Or, I love Jackie Kennedy. I didn't want to have to sit through a trial of Lee Harvey Oswald. That's why I walked into the police station and gunned him down. Well, the truth of the matter is, the truth nobody's ever told was laid out in that book, Double Cross. Jack Ruby was part of the mafia. He was a low-level hood, and he got an offer he couldn't refuse. And when you get an offer, an order from the mafia, you do not refuse it. He was told, according to the brother, the head of the mafia, that he would, and every member of his family, would be tortured to death if he did not do what he was told. And he, that dutifully, being a good mafia soldier, went in and killed Lee Harvey Oswald. That is certainly much more logical than the fact that that Jack Ruby killed Oswald because he saw a signboard that said, impeach Earl Warren.
I found a lot of evidence that Jack Ruby and Lee Oswald knew each other well.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about
many
that?
Many people saw them together. And in fact, when there was one witness I talked to named Thomas Edward Beckham, and on the day of the Kennedy assassination, because he knew both of them, and he was involved with all these people, with Jack Martin and whatnot, he said, how could Jack do that to Lee? It was common knowledge among this group and these people, and especially in Louisiana, where Jack Ruby often appeared, that they knew each other. There was a magician at the Carousel Club, Jack Ruby's club, who saw Oswald there one night. And in the Farewell to Justice, I described many, many witnesses of different places and different areas that knew that those two knew each other. There was one called Rose Sheremy, a woman up those cities north of Baton Rouge, who was murdered. But before that, when she was taken to that same East Louisiana State Hospital at Jackson, she was a prostitute and an alcoholic, but she had danced at that Carousel Club, and she too spoke about how Ruby and Oswald knew each other. There are many, many witnesses about that.
Well, was any of this brought out by the Warren Commission that was there to bring the truth to the American people?
Nothing true was brought out by the Warren Commission. And it was really a shame that when the United States government reinvestigated in the 1970s, as I said, they didn't do any better than the Warren Commission did.
Well, no, of course, then there was an investigation, a congressional investigation. That was the final investigation. And there, of course, they had the soundtrack, and they said there were not three but four shots fired, and there must have been a conspiracy. And then, of course, they did what all congressional committees do when they're about to find the truth. they disbanded the committee.
That's right, and exactly right. If not for that acoustic evidence and the number of shots, they might have endorsed the Warren Report. I think they were really, according to the evidence, they were planning to do so. And then that motorcycle dicta belt came along with the shots, and they just really, they couldn't ignore it. And so then they say, well, it's a conspiracy, but they took the focus off the government and put it on the mafia.
Well, I think we have to understand that there's a book. It's called The Missing Victims, I think the title of it is, written by Craig Roberts. And there were over 100 people who witnessed the assassination or had something to do with the cover-up immediately after it. Over 100 of them, of course, all died under very mysterious circumstances. Well, why should we be surprised? I mean, they could never let the American people know the truth of what had happened any more than they could let them know the truth about what happened to Bobby Kennedy, any more than they could let them know the truth about what happened to Martin Luther King. If you want that information, we have it all well documented from multiple sources. And we've got a great 4-tape set on the murder of Martin Luther King and the book written by the lawyer who was engaged by Martin Luther King's family to look into, to bring a trial against Lloyd Showers, who was owned the bar across the street from where Martin Luther King was killed. And, of course, he was actually hired by the CIA, and of course the CIA was, pardon me, he was hired by the mafia, who was being paid by the CIA. And the jury trial came out with that conclusion, and not a word in the controlled media. But we have the book he wrote called An Active State and a 4-tape set, excellent 4-tape set on the murder of Martin Luther King. People need to get the information and help us to get it out as far as we can. And the title of the book was Craig Roberts, JFK, the Dead Witnesses. That's JFK, the Dead Witnesses, pointing out over 100 people who knew something about the assassination. JFK, they were all systematically killed.
Well, I think Garrison often feared that he would be killed, too. And I think he didn't anticipate. I think nobody could have known in the 1960s and 70s The effort that the CIA would put to discrediting somebody and to destroying their reputation, to accuse them of not being sane. And even when I did my research in New Orleans and I talked to the FBI agent whose name was on the file with Lee Oswald at that FBI field office, Warren DeBruys, and all these years later, when I said, well, why didn't you, as a law enforcement agency, at the FBI, why didn't you help the district attorney of Orleans Parish to do his investigation? And he looked at me and he said, Garrison was a nut. Exact words. And, of course, that was the line that was put out by J. Edgar Hoover about any time anybody mentioned Garrison. And the CIA also put out papers. We have those documents which say, when the name Garrison comes up, this is what you say. And these were instructions to their assets in the media. This document was issued in April 1967.
And you actually have a copy of this,
yes,
document,
well, this
put out by the CIA to accuse anybody who tried to tell the truth of being a nut.
And then, the date of that document, April 1967, is the height of the Garrison investigation. So what they really, this is how you answer. You say that the communists did it. You say, and of course, Garrison is. I mean, Hoover also referred to other witnesses that were not convenient, such as a fellow named Nelson Delgado, who was in the Marines with Oswald, and he was testifying that Oswald wasn't a very good shot, and he also was called a nut. And then there was a woman in Dallas called Sylvia Odio, and I break that story in my books. She said that, you know, Oswald came to her door with two Cubans, and the Cubans then told her later that Oswald was talking about killing President Kennedy. Hoover decided she, too, was a nut. She was disturbed. She was insane. She was seeing a psychiatrist. That was the standard that they used. When they didn't bump you off, they couldn't very well kill everyone. They killed the real witnesses that saw the crime. The other people they could discredit. That's what they did. Writers, they can destroy in so many ways. They don't have to kill you. They can just make sure your book isn't reviewed. Or they could get their assets to denounce you in the press. That's the other style. And they do.
They do, and of course they'll even go around and buy up books and destroy them, and of course they simply disappear off the library shelves, and they disappear off of Amazon, and there's so many books, of course, we've talked about that are no longer available on Amazon, or there'll be one copy over in Great Britain for $198 or $250. They actually suppress books here in the United States. And that is why I think that you're wise. Now, did you privately print your books, or did you have a small
publisher? Good question. A Farewell to Justice was published by a small publisher called Potomac Books, which is out of Dulles, Virginia, you might wonder, because they published the works of many CIA people. And the publisher said to me, well, we poor Garrison, they really made him suffer. And then it turns out they don't send me my royalties. So that's what, the way they are handling it. And the other book, Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, was published by a small group called JFK Lancer out of Dallas, and they published it really because the story of Garrison's life needed to be told, and you can't get that in a bookstore. You have to either buy it from JFK Lancer or buy it from Amazon. I'm lucky, and given I didn't realize that Amazon just suppressed books. But I'm lucky so far, so good. Both books are also available on Amazon.
Well, I'm not suggesting that Amazon is suppressing. I'm suggesting that somebody buys them off of Amazon and more copies.
Uh-huh.
No, I think Amazon is a wonderful, wonderful source of information. And
you know why? One of the things about Amazon that's wonderful, I agree, is that they don't return books to the publisher. Let's say they buy 50, and they don't sell them right away. They just keep them until they sell them. Bookstores will, in 3 months, if your book isn't sold, back it goes to the publisher.
Amen to that. Well, there are lots of tricks that they have of suppressing information here in the United States, but one of the most effective is ridicule. Well, I guess this evening has been Joan Mellon, and of course she's written several books. And once again, let's get out your website so people can get in touch with you and get the information. And where can they get your books?
They can get Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, or Farewell to Justice on Amazon.com. And my own websites, joanmellon.net and joanmellon.com, both have information, speeches, essays, and also ways of getting both Jim Garrison, His Life and Times, and Farewell to Justice.
And
I really appreciate this, Dan. I really do.
Well, we want to get you on our other programs as well, because fortunately we have a number of networks we cover. Ladies and gentlemen, people say, well, wouldn't we be better off to forget it? Well, because we did forget it, we had September 11th. And, of course, there are going to be more contrived wars, and because there will be more assassinations of world leaders unless the American people learn, and learn from what's happened in the past. Well, Joan, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program here for us.
Well, I must say we are exactly on the same wavelength. I really agree that if the CIA had not...
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-.
By the CIA as an assassin, he was with Special Forces, that he heard several people from the CIA agents talking about the Kennedy assassination, how they had to kill him because, of course, he was a traitor to the country. I, of course, interviewed L.D. Howard. Of course, he... another gentleman who was an assassin, and of course it was Chip Tatum. He was assigned to kill Ross Perot. Remember when Ross Perot dropped his race for the presidency, then came back in, I think it was later in 88. But, of course, the reason was because there was a contract on his life. It had been given to a fellow named Chip Tatum, but he wouldn't take the contract, and he was here for a time, then disappeared, and I've been told that his body recently washed ashore from one of the Caribbean islands. But this is what happens to the people who, of course, refuse to go along and act as assassins. L.D. Brown was the other assassin. He was, of course, working for the CIA. He was assigned the job of killing a drug dealer in Texas, in Mexico. Turned out that the man was a man named Terry, and of course this was the fellow who had written a book called Compromise Bush Clinton and the Drugs at Mina Airport, and of course he'd gone into the background, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush's association with the drug war, and of course this man L.D. Brown was hired by the CIA as a professional assassin. He didn't carry out the assassination either. When I tried to get him onto the program, he said, I've got to get on with my life. They'd broken into his home, they'd stolen all the copies of his book. They'd done everything they could to terrorize him. He got the message. This happened. Jimmy Walters, a multimillionaire who'd written extensively, what happened on September 11, 2001, who actually spent almost $8 million of his own money on full-page ads in the New York Times and television stations in New York, convincing the people there. And he did convince the people that they hadn't been told the truth about what happened on September 11th. They harassed him. They threatened him. He's living in hiding over in Europe today. Could this really be happening? Ladies and gentlemen, this not only could, it is happening today. And remember the missing witnesses, JFK, the missing witnesses. They simply had them all killed, or most of them killed. We'll never know how many killed. If you want to know what happened in Waco, you need to get the DVD, Waco, A New Revelation. And there, of course, you'll hear the interviews with people who knew the members of the Delta Force that were sent in to kill the women and children. And they killed the women and children, but they just carried out their job. They were simply carrying out orders. They were ordered to do it. And, of course, those men were sent then off to Somalia. And you heard about the Black Hawk Down episode in Somalia. Well, many of them were members of the Delta Force that went into Waco to kill the women and children. And, of course, the Davidians, who were, of course, to be assassinated, who were not to oppose the government. Cindy, remember our telephone number? It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You need to get, of course, the 4-tape or 4-CD set, The Execution of Martin Luther King, and the book that goes with that, An Act of State. That's an active state. You need to get our 2-4 tape sets on the Kennedy assassination. There, of course, you'll hear a number of fascinating interviews, including one with Lee Harvey Oswald, you'll never hear elsewhere. And, of course, the Kennedy assassination and the Kennedy assassination update, very important documents that you won't hear elsewhere. And we hope that you tell other people about our program, encourage them to get the information. We carry a book called Elite Serial Killers, and then we carry another book called A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza, written by Craig Roberts, about the murder of President Kennedy, how it was done, who did it. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that determines what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for this next hour, they're going to be those of Larry Dawn, and we're going to be talking about his book, Emails to Rail. Emails to Rail, R-A-I-L. Who is Rail? Well, we're going to tell you in just a moment. Certainly our author has a master's and a doctor's in divinity, which he got from the Covenant Theological Seminary. He's an assistant pastor of a large church, 15 miles. He's written a fascinating book, and it's a takeoff on a book that C.S. Lewis had written called The Screwtape Letters. It's supposedly a series of conversations that were between the devil and one of his disciples. Taylor Caldwell wrote another book, Dialogues with the Devil, a takeoff on that again. The conversations between the Satan and the devil. One of his disciples, and this one, of course, is a takeoff again on this concept of communications between these supernatural beings. One of them, of course, is a organizer, the devils, and the other is, of course, a local demonic spirit named Rail. And of course, Rail is, well, if you spell it backwards, it comes out liar, L-I-A-R. Rail, of course, the title of the book, Emails to Rail. Of course, Larry, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's great to talk to you.
Why don't you give us a little background? What motivated you to write this book? This whole idea that right now, of course, the demonic spirits would not use certainly telepathy. They would not necessarily use books or letters as they would in the past. Now they would use the electronic media. They would use emails. So what you're describing is emails that were sent to this being, this demonic being named Rail. You pick up the story there and tell us what motivated you to do it and about some of the emails and the message you're trying to get out.
Sure. Well, years ago, when I first came to know the Lord, one of the first books I ever read was the Screwtape Letters. As the years went by, I found myself in St. Louis one day talking to a dear friend about what in the world the Screwtape Letters might look like today. And as I walked away from that conversation, I was sure, being the 21st century, that nobody would be writing it out longhand anymore. And email would be the way it would happen today. And the truth of it is, I've worked with high school age kids for 25 years, and I think if it happened right this very moment, it would probably be text messaging. But as we talked about it that day, I walked away sure that emails would be the way that would most likely happen at that point. The beginning of the book really is just a series of letters or emails, and so they're all very short, you know, like our emails are to each other, on what in the world it would take to better tempt Tom, who, believe it or not, if you get along in there, you'll find out he is doubting Thomas. And so what would it be like if you were going to be training somebody to tempt Tom to do the kind of things that would be anything short of being perfect, which is God's standard, be perfect. And so that's where it really took off.
Well, because there is very obviously a very intentional effort to corrupt our society, to corrupt our youth. And this is why we have the sex education in the schools. This is why they took God and prayer out of our schools. This is why they took discipline out of our schools. And look at our young people today, so many of them confused, and so many of them into gangs, into drugs, and into promiscuous sex. And we've changed the attitude of the youth of our nation. I'd say that the devil is doing a pretty good job.
You know, I have to agree with you. It's funny, just a few moments ago, I was on the web looking up a couple of things. If you were to go on my website, emailstorail.com, you'll find a chapter there called Pre-Modern, Modern, Postmodern, or What? And within that, I refer to Generation M, or the media, which is a term I really got from a study that George Barna had done. But if you go, just type that in, Generation M, you'll find a dozen studies that have been done in that whole area. The Kaiser Family Foundation did a study in March of, I think it was 2005 or 2006, and one of the interesting things that they showed is that in a typical teenager's room today, 31% of them have a computer in their own room, but 39% of them have their own cell phone. I could tell you from the families and the young people that I deal with even today, there are kids I know that there is no way they could afford gas for a car, but absolutely every one of them has their own cell phone.
And of course, now, of course, you can even get the pornography not on the computer, you can get on the cell phone too, can't you?
Without a doubt. You don't have to look very hard, and all of the garbage is out there.
And of course, what most Americans don't understand is the United States is the largest exporter of pornography in the entire world, and so much of what we're doing is aimed at corrupting the rest of the world. And where's the outcry from our churches? Where is the outcry from the good Christians of this country saying this has got to stop? We are destroying the moral foundation not only of our own country but the entire world. And of course, so much of this is thanks to the electronics we have. The Internet's a wonderful vehicle of getting ideas and information out, but it is also a very vile means of disseminating of pornography and depravity and corrupting the morals of people throughout the world.
I agree with you 100%. In fact, if you were to look at the 52nd of the 60 emails, you'd find, "Oh, lead us our computer." And actually, that is exactly a phrase that I saw scribbled on the wall of a building in Davos, Switzerland. We just had some dear friends that we had known over the years. No, I don't go to Switzerland every winter. I stay in Iowa where it snows plenty anyway. But we were in Davos in the summer a couple of years ago, and there on the wall it said, "Oh, lead us our computer." And I thought it was very interesting because just a few weeks after that, the World Economic Forum was meeting in Davos.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Larry Dodd as we talk about his book, Emails to Rail. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Larry Dodd. We're talking about his book, Emails to Males. And he was just talking about, of course, being over in Davos, Switzerland, and, of course, seeing... And what did you see written on the wall there in Davos?
It said, "Oh, lead us our computer." And I thought, wow, what a statement. Because the places that I saw there that were churches, oh, the churches galore, but there's nobody that would go to worship there. There are basically places that are held as museums. But just the same, whether it was simply somebody's comment or somebody's way of stating their position of the world, what struck me as so interesting was that within just a couple of months of when I saw that scribbled out, handwritten on a wall there in Davos, is the very place, the very same winter then, that the World Economic Forum met in that same community to put together plans and statements about what the economy should be worldwide. You think Satan doesn't have plans and ways to spread his lies? He sure does.
Sure there is. And, Chris, what most Christians really don't understand is Satan is not an abstract idea. He is a reality, and his demonic hordes are reality. And there really are people in this world today that are demonically possessed. And I know I've known a number of people who've been mediums, or they've renounced it, fortunately, and come to know the Lord. But they had actually this supernatural power. I have one friend who tells me that, I mean, people would come from all over, of course, to hear the seances. And, of course, when he was possessed, why, it was as if he suddenly moved out of his body and he sat next to his body, and there was another force that took over his body and would speak. And of course, the wonderful talk we heard this last weekend before last from Joanna Michelson, who had witnessed literally hundreds of supernatural miracles, which she thought were of God, and it turned out, of course, they were coming from the dark side. As a Christian, she couldn't believe that the devil and these demonic forces could commit, perform miracles, and yet she saw them. And it was only later on when she began to question them and rededicated her life to the Lord and had gone back and checked on these people whose names and addresses she'd kept, she found out that they were literally all demonically possessed. And we'll have that DVD available in the very near future for our listeners. Well, certainly, Larry, why don't you go ahead and just tell us the story as you lay it out. It's a series of emails or communications between this demonic spirit, and he's sort of a chief demonic spirit, to one of his underlings. So you pick up the story there. And what is the message that is being given to this underling about how we should go ahead and tempt poor old Tom?
The message is pretty simple. Lie. And you can tell the same lie in 100 ways, but whatever it is you do, make sure you tell the lie and tell it 100 times. Because if you hear any lie often enough, you begin to wonder if whether or not that isn't true. I say that because I was a marketing major as an undergrad at the University of Iowa. I was really trained basically to be vice president of advertising for some Fortune 500 company. But after working for several years, that's when I went to seminary. In the course of all that time, though, I began to see again and again how lies really are marketed. We hear all kinds of things. If we simply hear it often enough, then we'll begin to believe it. I walked through the 60 chapters just this last week, and these are some of the things that came up again and again. Anger, blame shifting, choices, consequences, guidance, grief, guilt, hatred. And you know the things that were dealt with the most often in the book were hope and hopelessness. There are half a dozen times throughout the course of that those are the very things that are brought up. Not that that Rael was told to tell the same lie, but to, yeah, tell the same lie, but dress it just a little differently each time so that even though it was the same false statement, it came out sounding just a little bit different.
Well, what were a couple of the emails that you liked the best?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think perhaps my own personal favorite is the ninth one in there, and it's simply called Sick and Tired of Being Sick and Tired. It's a point, talks about how epilepsy is shameful, medicine is the cure, and if you have epilepsy, then the lie is what you're supposed to do to hide that you have it. Because if you have epilepsy, life is truly hopeless. The reason I know all of those things to be so, because it was discovered when I was in my 40s that that's what was going on in my body that had just befuddled doctors for years. And so I wrote all of that really very firsthand. When you read through that whole chapter, what you find out at the end of it all is God's reply. In fact, that's just foreshadowing the sequel to this book that's coming yet, God's replies to Rael's lies. But at the end of each of the chapters, at the end of each of the emails, you find simply a quote from God's word. And the passage that's there in that chapter is 2 Corinthians 12. And if you don't care, I'll go ahead and read just a part of that.
All right, go right ahead.
It's taken right from the message. It's 2 Corinthians 12, just verses 6 to 10. If I had a mind to brag a little, I could probably do it without looking ridiculous, and I'd still be speaking plain truth all the way. But I'll spare you. I don't want anyone imagining me as anything other than the fool you'd encounter if you saw me on the street or heard me talk. Because of the extravagance of those revelations, this is Paul talking here, and so I wouldn't get a big head, I was given the gift of a handicap to keep me in constant touch with my limitations. He goes on from there. Paul had some kind of a weakness in his own body that God used not to keep him in check, but to help Paul keep his eyes back on God. And I want to tell you, I'm really grateful that I think that's what God did with me as well.
Well, I was really rather a little surprised that you'd use the message as a source of translation, because I don't think that the author of the message even say this was more or less just a commentary, but not really a trying to take the actual words of God, but of course his interpretation of them. I was a little surprised that you'd had used the message as the foundation for the scriptural of references that you used. Why did you pick that translation rather than one of the more traditional translations?
When I was in seminary, I went from 0 to 60 in 5, learning Greek and Hebrew, and you know, I was in my 30s when I went to seminary, so I learned basic Greek, basic Hebrew. And yet, the longer I've been at this in ministry, I go back again and again and say, well, how does that compare, whatever translation I'm reading, with what it really said here in the original version? And I know that he would be the first to tell you, you know, this is a paraphrase. But I have to tell you, there are some places that he is so close in terms of carrying the meaning of what really was being said there. Plus, if I were to tell you the same things my father said or my great-grandfather said, the language they would choose wouldn't exactly make sense today. And as long as what was being written there in the message really was being faithful with what was originally written in the Greek or Hebrew, I felt really free to use that, because it did put it in 21st century English so that we wouldn't miss it. And that's a lot of the reason I chose to use it so consistently through there.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now the whole of the basic theme is this: this evil director is telling a Rael how to go about corrupting this one target that they have, is Tom. And certainly the whole idea is to lie to him. But how are they going about the most efficient means of demoralizing this young man? Because, of course, there is this constant battle is going on in society today for the souls of men and women. I believe this is true. I believe we're subject to temptation. I think we're subject to greed. They certainly appeal to all of our base instincts, whether it be anger or envy, things of that sort. So basically, you know, we are under constant spiritual attack, and until people understand that, it's so difficult to really be able to stand against it. If you don't understand that there truly are demonic forces trying to demoralize it, then so much of what goes on really doesn't make sense. If these ideas of spirits are simply an abstract idea, oh, I pray you're not going to take it to heart, but I'm firmly convinced, and the longer I live, the more convinced I am that there really is a spiritual battle going on, that God rules in the affairs of men if we allow him to, but there's a force there that wants to turn us against God. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you can watch any of the, pick the movie that you want to go see today. And, you know, if you and I sat and watched it carefully, I would almost bet that we could sit down at the end and I could take 1 minute's worth of the conversation and you and I would both agree that, you know what, that's true. It's not true because the people who wrote the movie made it that way. It's true because it's what God said. And they just happened to snatch hold of that little bit of it. What's unfortunate, though, is that there's so many other things tied up with it in the entertainment industry, that we swallow those right up along with that tiny little bit of truth. And Satan is at war, and he knows he's already lost. So if he's already lost, why in the world would he want to still be involved? He simply wants to take as many along with him as he possibly can.
And I think he's, of course, he's using the television, he's using the motion pictures, he's using so many of the books that are out there and the magazines to undermine our faith. And Time Magazine constantly questioning the faith of Christians. So the same thing is true with Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report, because they're all published by what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, that hates God. And for the same reason they took God and prayer out of our schools, they knew exactly what they were doing, because they wanted to be able to corrupt our young people. Our schools are not there to educate, but to indoctrinate in the hatred of God. They're doing a pretty good job.
You're exactly right.
Go right ahead, Larry.
I'm so amazed, though, that God's plans are so much.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
In the Presbyterian Church in America, there are about a dozen different flavors of being Presbyterian, and the PCA is a relatively small denomination, but if you and I were good friends sitting here having a cup of coffee together, you'd see me smile when I tell you that we believe those wild and radical things like the Bible's true and salvation is through faith in Christ and no other way. And you would see me smile, but you'd know that that's really sad. Nonetheless, I'm very grateful that those are the things that are true in the place where God has allowed me to serve. And it is sad that there are not more places just like the PCA. But I am encouraged to know that I run into brothers and sisters where, yes, it is true in that particular congregation, regardless of what flavor the denomination is. I know that as a nation, we are at a place where if we are not willing to stand up and speak, things are going to change in a way that our children and grandchildren will just deal with long after we're gone. And so that's why I'm not afraid today to stand up and speak. You know, to say emails to rail, liar in training. It's like, Larry, you are asking Satan to come beat on you. And yet, you know what? This book is really nothing more than making plain the many, many ways, some of the many ways that I've observed his lies. So many of these things really are firsthand observations from others. One of them comes up is based on a story I was actually told at a wedding I went to where I began to ask a young man at the wedding. I'd never met him. I wouldn't know him. I don't think if I saw him today. I asked him, you know, if he were to die tonight, if he knew for sure he'd go to heaven. And he said, well, sure. I said, well, I'm glad. That's great. How do you know? And he said, well, you know, God, he's just going to, when we're all standing around outside there, he's going to see all of us sitting around out there, and he's going to say, oh, guys, come on in. Like, somehow or another, there really is nothing for us to do in terms of faith or anything else. It's just all going to be a big party at the end, so just get ready for that. And that's tragic. That, I think, is why the church is still here today. We fight an incredible battle with people just like you on the air or just like me writing who still have that obligation to say, we face dark days, but don't give up. Don't give up.
Well, of course, we have a unique opportunity in this ideological battle that's being waged, and we can play some small part in it to try to get people to think. And that is, of course, the biggest battle. And, of course, that eternal question, if you were to die tomorrow, where would you spend eternity? Why do you think that you would be admitted to heaven? And, of course, Most people have never really thought of that. I mean, do you really think that everybody's going to go to heaven? Because if everybody goes to heaven, then there's no sense of heaven here on earth. And of course, but you could be the best person in the world, and you still would not get into heaven, because nobody would really be able to live up to God's commandments or to God's requirements. It is only through the death of our Savior, because Jesus died for our sins, that we have an opportunity to get into heaven. And that's the answer to the question, but most people don't know the answer.
That's right. And in fact, I think there are many, many people out there who really aren't interested, because they'll want to tell you that, you know, it makes me think of the Matrix, you know, that, you know, if it all falls apart here, I'll just come back and have another shot at it and work it out next time. Rather than live up to the realization that, no, there won't be a next time. God has given us however many days we have here as a gift. And he doesn't give us a second run at it. He says, you know, come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. But he doesn't say, I'll make it easy later on, guys. It's come to me in faith. It's by grace that we're saved through faith, no other way.
Now, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but through me. Our guest, of course, is Larry Dawn. We're going to be back here. When we get back, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And here in California, why, we almost lost Proposition 8. It was a statement really of the fact that God has said that marriage was a situation for men and women to enter into. And there's other people, of course, who have an intense hatred of God and want to legitimize their corrupt lifestyle. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is Larry Dawn. We're talking about his book, Emails to Rails. And people, of course, say, well, where do you get off judging other people and what they do? And I say, well, I don't judge them at all. But God has judged them. And certainly, if you look at the Bible, you'll find that God says homosexuality is wrong. It's not what I say, it's what he says. What's your source that says it's right? And, of course, nobody ever wants to ask that or answer that question in that manner. We always try to use one means or another to get around the issue. But people very, very seldom, you know, in public gatherings will get up and say, homosexuality is wrong because God says it's wrong. And if you have any hope of eternal salvation, and I hope that you do, and I want you to be able to get into heaven, you're going to have to acknowledge that you are a sinner, and you're only saved by grace. And so but you need to willingly accept that gift of salvation. And a lot of people, I really believe that the foundation of homosexuality is a rejection of God and God's plan for men and women and society as a whole. What are your thoughts on that, Larry?
In the end, if our hope isn't in Christ, we have no hope. God's plan and the way he looks at all of our lives is that while I might drive 65 out there on the highway and I feel like I'm doing great, the fellow who passed me doing 70, I think, oh man, you're a sinner, you're going way too fast. But the very fact that I'm judging him is in fact a sin as well. We hold such different standards to ourselves or others, that there is no such thing as us being perfect. That's God's standard.
I agree with you. I have a very good friend, and he is probably one of the most generous, altruistic people I know. He has spent his whole life doing good things for people, but he doesn't accept the gift of salvation. And I really worry about him very, very sincerely. He doesn't want to hear about my concerns, but all I can do is pray for him that someday before he dies, and we are both, of course, getting on. I've known him since 1955. What's that, 53 years that we've been friends, and certainly I have the greatest respect for him as a human being. I do not know a more generous, giving individual, but he rejects the message of salvation. That's the problem. He knows about God, but he doesn't have a personal relationship with him, which, of course, is the only guarantee that we have. Well, our guest this evening is Larry Don. The book, of course, is Emails to Rails, and, of course, it's written as a series of emails written by a demonic force to one of his underlings. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, we will welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. The book is a takeoff on C.S. Lewis's wonderful book, The Screwtape Letters, which is a classic. It's been around for 50 years or more. The Screwtape Letters, and then, of course, Taylor Caldwell wrote a follow-up to that, Dialogues with the Devil, which I read when I was first getting started, my quest for understanding what's going on. And then now Larry has written an update, of course, no longer using letters as a means of communication, but now we have emails. And, of course, these emails are being sent to a demonic spirit named Rail, which, of course, if you spell it backward, becomes liar. If you have a question or comment for our guest, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. The book is published by Tom Horn, Anomalous Publications. Tom is a personal friend who's going to actually republish my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and hopefully we'll be able to get it, spread widely across America by the fall of next year. Or maybe even sooner, maybe. And we hope, of course, it will have an impact as we try to outline for people the true nature of the spiritual battle that's going on. But, of course, the Larry's book is also telling about the spiritual battle. What sort of response are you getting to your book, Larry?
Actually, it's been very interesting because, on one hand, the emails I've received, no pun intended there, but the emails I've received from others have been very positive. The different places I've had others comment on the web or on the emailstorail.com website, the comments have all been very positive. I remember speaking a couple of weeks ago to a young lady who was reading through it, and she sat down and she said, I started to read this really quickly, but then I realized I needed to stop and think about each of these things a little by little. So I read about one or two pages at a time. I said, that's exactly right, because each of the lies is just a little bit of a different twist. And her response was, that helps me a lot. I'd encourage you to do just that. If you sit down and read through this, one or two emails that have popped, and then take a look at what God's Word has got to say in response to those, you'll begin to see a whole lot more of why the emails to Rail make sense. In fact, really, the response, the follow-up for this is called God's Replies to Rail's Lies that I'm working on right now. And it really is the opportunity where Thomas ends up there facing God. He says, Lord, I do have a question or two, as silly as that sounds. And God says, okay, go ahead and ask your questions. And then it's really a summary of the questions raised, but then God taking some time to explain to him why each of those lies is so absolutely wrong.
Well, you know, Chris, there's so many things out there that people have questions on. Why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? Why does God allow, a young mother, to die immediately after the birth of a child, or suddenly go off and die, and leave her husband with six children? Why does God allow wars? Why does God allow suffering? Why does God allow cancer and disease? And these are all questions that really plague people. Do you really believe, of course, that Eve talked to a snake, or the snake talked to Eve in the Garden of Eden? All these things aimed at raising questions about our faith. How do you deal with questions like that?
I thought it was very interesting, first of all, that when I was thinking about some of this, I thought, without picking on anyone in particular, I thought I would look at what it is the Muslims might say to that. And a key idea of the Muslim faith is that of submission. In fact, the very word Muslim means submission. So here's my question then. What if you live your whole life only to learn that you've submitted to lies? What if you're told that the product's great, but it isn't great if you want a refund? What if there's no refund that's possible? So as I thought about that, it led me to the thought that the idea of believing a lie that has eternal consequences is worth considering. Regardless of what you want to say about believing the Bible, for just a moment, set that aside and say, you know, what if the choice I make today really does make a difference for tomorrow? We believe that politically all the time. What if it makes a difference in terms of how I live? Well, God says it does. And God's got a lot of things to tell us in terms of how we deal with those issues. If we once come to the point of saying, yes, there is such a thing as a big issue out there, something serious, something more than just playing with words, then we have to come to the point of saying, there's somebody bigger than me out there.
Well, you know, that's really so true. As a physician practicing in a town, here, a seaside town, we, of course, had a very, very close relationship between all of the doctors. There weren't that many doctors when I came to town. And for a number of years, as new young specialists came to town, we were all sort of bound together. We were highly trained in various specialties, but we spent a lot of time in the doctor's room together. And most of the doctors were not Christians. They weren't coming from a Christian point of view. And, of course, they sort of tolerate me with knowing I was an evangelical Christian. And then, of course, something horrible would happen to one or another of them. Maybe they'd lose a wife, or they'd have a divorce, or maybe they'd lose a child. And suddenly they realized they needed something, and it was only at that point that they would become Christians. And we Christians had a little prayer group that met every Tuesday or Thursday morning for about an hour before surgery or before we went to work. And, you know, through the years we may have picked up six or eight physicians there who would come on a regular basis. But every one of them came because there'd been a tragedy in their life, and they suddenly realized that they were incapable of handling that on their own. When you're a physician, you know, you're really, of course, almost like a god unto themselves. You do wonderful things. You make life and death decisions. You save people's lives. And, of course, you think that it's what you do. You, as a surgeon, you reconstruct joints. But without ever realizing, of course, that whatever you do, you're doing God's work and you're using God's techniques. And a doctor never healed anybody. They healed themselves, or they healed themselves with God's help. And if God intervenes on the wrong side, they do not die, they do not live, and no matter what you do, you're not going to save them. Until people understand that there is a God, and he's not your doctor, and he does have a plan for the world, and perhaps he allows suffering, but it will have an impact on other people for the rest of their lives, and that we are to accept what he offers us. Until you understand that, it's very difficult to understand why a loving God would allow the suffering that we see. And lots of things I don't think we can ever understand, but I think we just have to accept them as a matter of faith. What are your thoughts on that, Larry?
Well, I think that's exactly true. I mentioned to you earlier that earlier in my life I had suffered so from epilepsy. When 9/11 happened, I was laying in a hospital bed in the Twin Cities, and I watched it happen live because I was laying in the hospital bed there as they were preparing me to do brain surgery. I had a scar in my brain that they removed, and that's what had been causing the problems for me. And over the course of a couple of years after that, I actually finished my doctorate and went back to work and went on and finished writing this book and all kinds of other things. But, you know, the man who actually was the neurologist who was able to help me, who stood there and he told the neurosurgeon, yes, take this, no, don't do that, through the whole thing, he himself, in these last 2 years, died of brain cancer. It wasn't that man's hands, it wasn't his wisdom, it wasn't any of that that is what led me through and dealt with that physical problem that I had. It was God using him in a good way.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. Before we went on the radio, my producer this evening and I were sitting talking, and I told him about one of the most amazing stories that I'd ever heard, and it's something that occurred just about 3 weeks ago. And, of course, the has not been covered in the media in America, has not been covered in the media in Israel, but you'll find numerous references to it up on the Internet if you simply type in Iran pirates and a nuclear attack. Pirates, Iran, nuclear attack. You Google that in, you'll find dozens of articles, including one on the Israel National newspaper, or news service, something of that sort. But it's all over the Internet, but not a word in the regular media. And, of course, it is basically a story of the fact that about a month or so ago, why a ship left China, probably maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago now, a ship left China and then somehow was coming around the base of the Saudi Arabia, past Yemen, and just off the shores of Somalia, when a pirate ship, a group of pirates, about 40 Somali pirates, came up to the ship, boarded the ship, took charge of the ship. And, of course, you may have read something in the media about that maybe a month or so ago, but the rest of the story has never been told. Well, what happened was the pirates, of course, what pirates always do, they want, of course, to hold the ship for ransom, hold the people on board for ransom, so they send out their demand for ransom. And, of course, immediately the American and Russian ships began converging on this, and helicopters began flying over. Well, the pirates weren't too worried because they had the ship and they had the people, and they had this whole load of certainly material in the ship, and they went down the hold, and there was nothing there but, you know, really thousands of bags. And they opened up the bags, and what were they? They were sand, dusty sand. And they thought, well, that's a strange thing to have in the hold of this ship that we've hijacked. And then, of course, the pirates began to get sick. Their hair fell out, and they began to think, well, we've got the stomach flu or something. And then 16 of the pirates died. Now, this is the story. 16 of the pirates died, and then, of course, about this time, why, of course, they figured maybe they better get off that ship, which they did, and we don't know what happened to the pirates. We assume that they were arrested. The ship was taken to port, but the true story was, of course, the plan was that this was an Iranian ship. It was loaded down with sand that was radioactive, strongly radioactive, so strong that simply a brief contact with it would cause death in these pirates. That ship was to have been taken through the Suez Canal and parked offshore from Tel Aviv, just outside the international waters. And, of course, when the wind was right, all the crew would get off. They'd be taken to Gaza, picked up by another ship. It would detonate the ship, and it was going to then make the whole west coast of Israel uninhabitable. Anybody can go up on the Internet, find the story there. Totally blacked out in the American media, in the Israeli media. But, you know, if you stop and contemplate it, and you stop thinking about the geopolitical implications, how could this have happened without God's intervention? I mean, talk about the most amazing story. I mean, who would ever think a group of pirates, and you'll find dozens of stories on the Internet telling exactly the same story, and the Russians have commented on it. Not a word in our media, of course, or Israeli media, but it's an act of war. But, of course, God intervened. If the story is true, God had to have intervened and, of course, prevented that ship from being detonated off the shores of Israel. And, of course, I believe God plays a part in keeping Israel intact, as he's defended it time again from attacks, certainly in the 57 War and the 67 War and the Yom Kippur War. And God always intervenes in Israel's favor. An amazing story that, I mean, this is something that's happened within the last month. I think no other logical explanation. The pirates would take the ship, and, of course, then because they were dying, why the ship, of course, would not be detonated. And God does intervene in the affairs of men, and I think it was certainly Benjamin Franklin who said, the longer I live, the more convinced I am that God does intervene in the world affairs of men. Would you concur, Larry?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think even as you spoke there, it brought to my mind two other things that do come up in emails to Rail, one of them is simply blame shifting. Because when things go incredibly well for us, we want to take the credit. Or when things go well for someone else, we want to take the credit. And yet, when things don't go well, we are very, very quick to point our finger to someone else, anyone else. And blame shifting is one of the whole issues that's dealt with there. But it struck me also that we just live in a time where Satan is made fun of in so many little ways, sometimes on his own part, so that we will take him lightly and not pay attention to him. I made contact with the folks that actually do the marketing and own the rights to Scott Adams' Dilbert cartoons, and so it was only with his permission that I even used the quote I did about Phil, the ruler of Heck, as the subject for one of the emails. Well, I don't know if you recall reading that comic or not, but basically Phil is a guy dressed in a red suit with a pointy tail, you know, all of the caricature things we could do to make a picture of Satan. And he's hired, basically, to harass everybody because that was his job. Well, if we would simply begin to think of Satan as being Phil, the ruler of Heck, well, that doesn't sound like much. After all, Phil, that's just a regular guy's name. And Heck, I mean, that's just one of those non-swear word words that we pretend. Well, that in itself is another reminder of the fact that Satan wants us to buy any lie to keep our focus off of the truth.
I certainly agree, and Crystal, one thing, of course, that they've done so very effectively is to, you know, trivialize evil, to trivialize the devil, to trivialize hell. In fact, many of our ministers don't even believe in hell. They think it's an abstract term. You know, of course, they call it the absence of God. It's not a real place. There's no eternal punishment. After all, a living God wouldn't have done that. And one of my friends has said, well, that's not the God I worship, a God that would send people to eternal punishment. But the difficulty is that we don't determine the nature of God. I mean, that's not our job. That is not our assignment. And I think we have to realize that there is a force out there and a personality that does interfere in our lives. And I think if you look back through your own life, many of our listeners may very well have seen his hand in their lives. I know I've seen him in my life and the lives of my family, and kept us safe under amazing circumstances. Well, our guest this evening, of course, has been Larry Dawn. His book, Emails to Rail. Where can they get the book?
Pick it up at emailstorail.com.
Emailstorail.com or Amazon. We'll be right back. Well, Larry, you've got 3 minutes.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey Water Filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Dialogues with the Devil, the Screwtapes letters, and, of course, now emails to Rail, Rail being the local demon who's trying to tempt Tom or Thomas. Well, anyway, of course, we do hope that many of you out there, if you have any questions at all about what's going on, will want to get a great new set we have. It's called Final Countdown. It's put out by Pastor Billy Crone, and we've got to know Billy through the years. We've interviewed him a number of times, and he'll be coming on to give us another interview. I think we have several interviews with him next week. And he has actually put together 10 DVDs, the countdown, starting with 10, 9, 8, 7, of what's going on today. And certainly, if you're a Christian, or if you're even not a Christian, I think you'll really enjoy his presentation. Dramatic, yes, certainly, with tremendous intensity because he believes in what he's saying. But he's done the research that you need to have at your fingertips as you discuss with others the significance of what's going on today. That is the final countdown. We will, hopefully, you can order the Ten Commandments. They'll be the same price as either Part 1 or Part 2 of the Final Countdown. And we'll make that. We're going to be getting that. We're watching some of his other DVDs. But we like to watch them ourselves before we present them. And if there's anything I seriously disagree with, we'll put a little note in there. But almost everything, 99% of what he says, I'm in total agreement with. I think it's a great asset. It's a great instructional source for you. It's called The Final Countdown, Part 1 or Part 2. And you can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we strongly recommend the books written by Ellen Gundersen Traylor. That's Ellen Gundersen Traylor. If you have a catalog, you can look her books up. We carry most of those books she's written, biblical books and biblical stories. If you don't have access to a computer, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to send you a catalog. You should have one anyway. If you're interested in getting long-term storage foods or a Berkey water filter or certainly the health products that you should have on hand to help you maintain your health and immunity and the defenses of your body and the difficult times that lie ahead and lay in a good supply of them, we do. So I and our family will have them readily available. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's the final countdown, the Ten Commandments, which we try to get ordered, but you can order them, and just the girls don't know anything about it, just tell them we want the Ten Commandments and ask Dr. Stan. And then if you'd like the other items, if you'd like a catalog on long-term food storage, because we are moving into difficult times. If you'd like to know about getting a Berkey water filter, if you'd like to know about the health products that we think are important, or things that are recommended by our good friend Dr. Blaylock, who's a frequent guest here on this program and has done a yeoman's job in getting the information together that you need for your health. And incidentally, if you haven't read his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, that's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Or if you haven't seen the four-tape set we put together called Health Life-Saving Secrets, that's Life-Saving Secrets. It's a four-tape set. Why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and then make preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead. Because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to see financial changes in this country like you've never seen before. Tragically, most people are going to lose their material possessions, or many of their material possessions, and those people who have not made proper arrangements as far as their finances are concerned are going to lose their life savings. But this always happens when the nation has turned its back on God. So please pray for America, pray for revival, and pray for our leaders, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
There are many people asking questions. There are many people asking why. There are many people paying attention. There are many now who see the veil lie.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is Thursday, the 5th of November. Oh, is it 5th? What is it, 6th? Oh, my atomic clock is off. Look at that thing. What's going on here? Crazy things going on. Anyway, it's, people are starting to get over their Obama hangover now, and I think reality's starting to set in. And maybe folks are starting to see, yeah, we're going to see some changes. Yeah, we're going to see changes. The question is, what kind of changes are we going to see? And will those changes give us yet another reason to ask the question, where is the line in the sand? This is Dave Von Kleist.
And Joyce Riley. And I have to disagree with you, Dave. I don't think they're over the Obama headache hangover. I think it's just beginning to happen. I think everybody is tired of hearing about election. And you know, just today I thought, okay, now we can move on. We'll hear some news on television, right? Wrong.
Mm.
The reality show continues on every single...